Listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Hosted tonight by Jonah Richman and myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight we will continue on our jaunt talking about love and creativity. Going to be a captivating conversation, and feel free to join the conversation by dialing 530-895-1114. That will get you on the air. 530-895-1114. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with you. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rollo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rollo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rollo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
Do you enjoy performance art? Do you wonder what performance art is? Have you thought you might like to try it out for yourself? Tonight at 5 p.m., or right now, I mean, we will continue our segment on love and creativity with guests Michaela Bogowitz and Mike Bogowitz, and a Michaela Bogowitz is the head coach of the Chico Acrobatics Club and Chico Acrobatics Performance Team. Her brother, Mike, joined the Chico performance art scene just this year and is offering aerial silks classes to the local community. You can join the conversation by dialing 530-895-1114. Welcome, Mike and Michaela.
Yeah, thank you. I feel welcome.
Glad you guys are here. I love to start by just having you explain in a little more detail what you each do and what that looks like.
Michael, do you want to take it off?
Yeah, sure. We're both just kind of general circus artists that comes in a, you know, really wide variety of, you know, say like partner acrobatics or fire dancing or aerial play, you know, whether it be on like silks, you know, the big pieces of fabric that are typically attached to the ceiling. People climb up them and then roll down. General clowning around and just all sorts of circus play.
Acrobatics specifically doesn't utilize any equipment other than a partner or two or three or 12 that you would be working with. Generally, we stack on top of each other in every kind of creative way that we can think of. And another major aspect of specifically acro yoga, which is mostly what I coach, is to formulate sequences, so a series of moves without ever coming to the ground with one other very specific and dedicated partner. It's a lot of fun, builds a lot of trust.
So how did the two of you end up doing it? I mean, you are brother and sister, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So it's an interesting bond that you both have. So could you share a little bit of how the two of you
started? Yeah, I have always been interested in anything that was even slightly gymnastics-like. I started cheerleading when I was probably 3 years old. And then my family moved around quite a bit. And I remember moving to a new city and having to retry out for the cheerleading team. And to do that, I went to a gymnastics gym that had acrobats at it. And my mom told me, she's like, well, honey, if you don't make it into the cheer team, what about acrobatics? And I was like, Mom, no way. I'm going to make the cheer team. But I didn't. And after being heartbroken for about a day, my mom re-brought up acro. That was when I was 13 years old. And so I started attending that. Michael went to that same gym to do gymnastics. And from there, we've never looked back. We've gone on to compete in junior Olympic events. We've both been to nationals I've been in two disciplines. Michael went as a trampolinist. And we've done a lot of performance since then. It's just been a lifelong passion, for sure.
So for those who may not know the difference, what is the difference between acrobatics and I'm forgetting the word, what you just said.
Trampolining?
Acrobatics and gymnastics.
Oh, gymnastics. Okay, so we just had the Olympics. Probably a lot of you watched. Gymnastics is like utilizing for women's five equipment pieces, like beam, bars, floor. Acrobats don't have any of that. We just have each other. And we also don't work alone. You only would ever do acrobatics with a partner. You have to have a partner for it.
Nice. So I've seen you guys around for a little while. I like to, at the Thursday night market, I'll see people out there climbing on top of each other, and I've tried it out a few times, and it looks like a lot of fun. What would you say draws people to this kind of play?
I mean, it's a really big passion of ours, obviously. And something I want to mention is that this Thursday night market, we love acrobatics so much that we chose to give it away for free to the community. There's, I believe, Jason Niemer, the inventor of Acro Yoga Incorporated. He just released a statement not too long ago commenting on how in our like current day and age in society, so much of our human connection is coming through technology, you know, whether it be through texting or Facebook or all of these mediums where we're just talking to a computer instead of actual face-to-face interaction and attaining physical touch. And what better modality to like really connect with another human being than to not only crawl all over them, but occasionally literally put your life in their hands, you know, like have a really deep level of trust and get a lot of the satisfaction of, you know, physical touch in a totally platonic way from this partner. On top of that, there's something that's really, really draws me into circus arts is select a few moments in life where you have nonverbal communication. It's like just you and this other being, like you can just through your movements, through body language, there's almost like a telepathic connection, and it's really, really beautiful, magical moment, you know, that acrobatics can provide.
Definitely. I think it's pretty rare in our society to touch someone's thigh before you know their name. And that happens a lot in acrobatics. All the time I'm grabbing somebody, telling them where to put a certain body part onto my hip, on my butt, wherever it is, wherever the skill needs to happen. And then we come down from it and I'm like, oh, by the way, I'm Michaela. And I think that's definitely a big draw for people. I think people want to be touched, want to be loved, want to feel part of a community, and acro really fosters that.
So I was curious about something you mentioned, Mike. What is trampolining? Was that the word? Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is that exactly?
So trampolining is there. Once again, in the Olympics, you may have watched this event. There, it's not your traditional trampoline. These trampolines are typically sprung about 4 feet off the ground because the beds drop so deeply that they're throwing people sometimes 20, 30 feet in the air.
Wow.
And you're just doing all sorts of, you know, very acrobatic flips flying through the air.
I think it's a lot like Olympic diving, except for you don't land in a pool. You get thrown back up to the air and do it, you know, 10, 15 more times before you're done.
Wow,
yeah.
Amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I'm just thinking the times that I've tried acro yoga, I love that exactly what you're saying, that feeling of connection with people. And I had that experience where I played with people who I didn't know their names yet.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's a workout. It's
yes.
Exercise and the focus. I really like the element of you really have to focus in order to do those things.
Yeah, that's very true. We have a kind of a running joke that laughter kills acro, which I don't totally love to say, but you do have to have such a degree of focus that if you're laughing up there, it's lots of fun, and I do encourage it, but it won't create good skills.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, being a meditator myself, I like those arts that require a lot of attention to detail and that hyper focus, that Zen kind of mindset you can get in. And I felt that.
Yeah, I think that's what draws the yoga into acro yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say from my few attempts with acro yoga that it has to do with the trust element. You really have to work on your trust, not only with, say, an established partner. It's like helping you to build that trust element. Like you said, putting your life in their hands. Essentially, like when you're lifted off the ground, elevated, you don't really have control over which way your body might go. And so you have to have real trust in the person that's lifting you, or trust in yourself that you're going to fall gracefully or fall well. And so that component, not only with an established partner, but with a stranger, with somebody you've never met before. And so it's helping, in my opinion, to rebuild that trust in like the greater community that you may live in. And then communication. And one of the acro yoga classes I took, like she stressed that. It's like you have to really good communication with your partner. You have to be willing to ask the question, does this feel okay? Do I need to move my foot? Like, these sort of things that normally we kind of get through in our community and our society and our relationships without communicating with each other. Like we rely a lot on the cues we think should be there or that we read into. But in acro yoga or, you know, in acrobatics, somebody's lifting you, it can be a world of difference by just like saying something. That's how you're feeling.
Definitely. Yeah, good partner talk is a big concept in acrobatics, and it's learning how to communicate effectively while upside down, while being thrown, and in a way that your partner is going to be receptive to. Getting on your partner's case and doing the blame game, you won't get far, you know? You have, it's something that you have to work together to do. It's very team building.
Nice. I like that you brought in the word receptive too, because that's a big thing about communication too. It's not just about us saying what we need, but making sure that it's being received well by the person who's hearing you.
Definitely.
A part that gets forgotten sometimes.
I think it's another draw as well. You know, you have a chance for your voice to really be heard and to have these concerns be heard. And that provides, you know, you with a little bit of satisfaction, even if it is, well, I would say especially if it is, you know, your life that's being put into their hands. And I think another important thing to mention, acrobatics, yeah, sure, they are dangerous, but there are a lot of very safe ways to go about this. Mm-hmm. We always have mats around us for safety and spotting. Being able to call upon other people to make sure that a skill goes smoothly and that, you know, the flyer isn't, you know, say, hanging with their head towards the ground without somebody to catch them if it's, you know, the first time that you're attempting this skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories or experiences that really highlight what it's like to be doing performance art like this?
Oh, probably have a million. We've been performing for so long. I think that the first performance I was ever the coach of is the one that really gets called into memory for me. I had a team, gosh, there were probably 11 of us, which is a pretty big crew to be performing for, and it was my first ever coaching event. It was with Chikoko, the fashion show here in town, hired us to perform on their catwalk, and
I was at that one.
We've done it a couple times since
it?
Then.
Okay.
Yeah, probably four now.
Okay.
And they had us come out four times throughout the night, and I was trying to corral my athletes because you have just this ramp of energy and excitement and endorphins and adrenaline, and then you get out on stage and you do what you're supposed to do and then come back into backstage and all of that revs back down, and then an hour later it all got hiked, and by the time we got to our last and most impressive performance piece, they were so tired. My athletes, I felt terrible, but they couldn't have been more excited. Just the energy of the crowd is enough to get you there every single time. And acrobatics, it's not something that a lot of people see all the time, right? It can be really rare for some people. And they just love it, and you can just feel it.
I have two smaller stories with a kind of a similar theme. The first one being my first ever fire dancing show. Fire dancing is something that I've really kind of put a lot more time and energy into and mastered that craft quite a bit more than the acrobatics. But they do go hand in hand. Anyway, back to this first fire dance piece I ever got paid for. It was a dear friend. Her father was a cancer survivor. He was in the hospital for nearly 2 years. He was a very, very active man, and he just had all of this, you know, excessive energy and activity, you know, ripped away from him with this terrible disease. So his daughter really wanted to bring some fire dancers to his coming home party as like a token of, you know, a memento of his extreme life of adventure. And when we lit up our props and we were dancing for him, I looked over and I couldn't help but notice this man was just in tears. He was just crying because he was so incredibly touched by the generosity of his daughter and how thoughtful, you know, this piece of action and adventure was just placed right in his lap, and he was able to enjoy that for the night. And there's just something, a common theme I've noticed in circus arts is there's been quite a few times where people have just been brought to tears by the raw beauty of it. You know, it's literally poetry in motion. And I can't tell you how many people I've had, you know, pop up onto my feet for acrobatics, and sometimes they'll just start laughing and laughing and laughing uncontrollably. Mm. You know, they're just having so much fun. There's like this deep sense of liberation that comes out of them, and there are just all these deeper emotions that we don't really tap into on a day-to-day basis that I can fairly regularly find, you know, within the circus arts realm. Mm.
This is a really beautiful story. I could imagine myself in a situation like that. Where do you...
So the question, though, or the story that you were telling about watching somebody perform for the first time, and I can relate to that experience of like how it can revel so many strong emotions inside of you, because it's like I compare it to like the first time that you've, you know, seen a beautiful national monument, for instance. Like it's like it's so breathtaking to see the liberation and the experience that it evokes something out of you that you're not really sure what it is and like how to tap into it, and for that moment it's awoken in you through somebody else's experience. And so how beautiful an opportunity to be able to bring that to people, and like you said, how many, not only to be grateful for that experience brought to him by his daughter, but how many people in their lives may never experience that. Mm-hmm. Like just to be able to see that. I think about I took my mother to one of the Fab Lab parties a couple parties ago. For anybody that doesn't know, the Fab Lab is a creation space here in Chico, California. And she saw fire dancing for the first time. My mother's from another country. She's from Costa Rica. And, you know, for me, unfortunately, I've seen quite a few fire dancing. So I was kind of like, yeah, it's cool. But just to watch it through her eyes. Like, my mother's 62. And she was just like blown away. Like, these kids are playing with fire very close to their like faces and hairs, and like, and just marveled by the experience, but also like that spark of inspiration that is born through that of like, well, if they can do that, mm-hmm. what can I do? And maybe you don't want to become a fire dancer necessarily, but just the invitation that an action creates. So we just, you know, we never know what that's sparking for somebody else, but I think we can see it in that eye, in the look that someone's giving. So I was really appreciative of that story. And like what you were saying, Michaela, with, you know, bringing people back up to that enthusiasm to perform, and like how much raw power really exists in the human emotion, like by the people that were present there to watch it. Like, we forget about that. Mm-hmm. We forget that like you could be completely exhausted, and when somebody is expecting something of you, or if you are just given this raw, beautiful joy and expression of possibility from your audience, it's like, okay, I guess it's like the encore, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we are totally exhausted. There's no way we can do this. But then you hear those cheers and that celebration, and it's like, okay,
it's all worth it.
Yeah. You know, it's a reciprocal gift of the performer giving the gift and the audience giving back their gratitude.
That's such a beautiful way to put it, and I couldn't agree more.
Awesome, yeah. So basically the theme right now, you know, we kind of touched a little bit about it, is love and creativity. And so to give you a general premise of how the show sort of organizes itself, is that it starts with self-love, which then eventually goes on to love of the other, whether that's a family member, a friendship, a partnership, but just the next step beyond yourself, to eventually the love of the community or the love of the world, this love that's much greater than yourself. And so we sort of organize this show in segments to cover these themes of ideas, because in reality, we could go on forever talking about love. We can just, you know, it's an endless topic. And so talking about love and creativity, we're looking at what relates to love. What is creativity in its many forms, many fashions and forms? We had people come on and talk about event planning, talk about construction of stages at festivals, and I mean the list goes on in terms of how people express the creativity. And so I see this, you know, this form that you all do, the circus arts, as a form of your creativity. And so I'm wondering if maybe you can speak a bit to that component of creativity, how you maybe view creativity in the work that you do.
Absolutely. It's so much fun to create a show. I'm planning one out right now, and I'm having such a good time choreographing the routine. To me, it's really about writing a story, but I can't use words. I can't use like a script or anything like that. It's all about getting my message across with the way that I and my athletes use their bodies. So I have to be incredibly creative. We've done a show where we created a giant prop. It was this huge lollipop. It must have been 3 feet tall. And we had two people fighting over it and using acrobats as their like prop to like get really high up and hold it away from the other person. And it was, the show was for kids. And in the end, they, after playing tug of war and fighting over this lollipop for a really long time, they shared it, and it was really fun. So it was kind of like a creative way to express that in the end, making a friend is better than having something all to yourself. Oh, that was such a fun show. Right now, I'm writing a love story between two people. This is a much smaller show for me. It's just my boyfriend and I. And we're both throwing a lot into this creative process. And it's fun to be limited by the things that we aren't able to do and have to figure out how to still tell the story, even though we can't do some of those higher level skills or the more graceful, beautiful ones, but it still needs to present as a love story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so amazing when you're talking, describing the creation of the story. I was wondering if you've ever watched or gleaned some inspiration from like the silent movies.
I haven't, but that would be a really awesome place to check into.
Right, that's what it reminds me of when you're saying telling a story all through movement without, I mean, without being able to express what's actually going on in the story.
Right.
And then I think about when you're talking about with children specifically, I worked a lot with children, and so they say that children watch more of what you do than what you say. So if you're demonstrating to children without necessarily where they have to follow your movements and you're not just... it's important to share, not
right.
fight over things. It's like, how many times have they heard that? But how much more are they going to remember this really theatrical expression, that same concept, you know, that I'm sure took much time and love to create. But, you know, but they're really going to be able to, that's going to be something that's going to stay with them many years into their life. So thank you for those two things. And the love story, I'm intrigued to hear more about that. And it reminds me of something that keeps coming up, which is the freedom that comes within limitation, which is like this really interesting concept, right? Because we're like, oh, freedom is endless. There's no limits to freedom. But actually, there's a lot of study and a lot of Buddhism that talks about the freedom that can be found when you do have to set limitations, because it forces you to go deeper and reach for more things that are outside of your reach normally, things that you wouldn't first think of, like, oh, yeah, this is the move we would do. But now that that's not there, you're having to reach a little bit deeper to find creativity.
Yeah, it's problem solving, mm-hmm, is what it is. It's creative problem solving. And I just think it's a blast. When people come to me and ask me to create a show for them, the heavier of a hand they have in the theme of that show, I think the more creative of a routine I'll give to them. Mm. I've had some shows that are like, it's circus themed, but we already do circus arts, so that's kind of implied. And then I've had somebody come to me like, this is a metamorphosis show. Mm. And that one was really inspiring, because I was like, I have to change. Oh, one of the really fun ones, we got hired to act as Angry Birds. If you guys know the game. Mm-hmm. So we stacked acrobats up and then knocked them down, and we were all in costume, and it was, that I think was one of my favorite shows ever, because I had a lot of creative limitation that was very heavily themed, and it was just a blast. Our catwalk, we performed again on a catwalk for that one, and it was only 3 feet across, and I had 12 acrobats up there.
Wow.
And that, yeah, we had to have a lot of thought process, a lot of thought process went into that one. A lot of ordering and reordering and creating a show that was going to be captivating to an audience and flawless and capable in the space and under the theme of the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. I liked how you said that the theme is actually the thing that stimulates the creativity.
Yes.
When you don't have a theme, then you just fall back probably to something more familiar that you've done.
Yeah.
But when you get that theme, and it just kind of feels like sounds like a good parallel to life. When we go through our life, but then stuff comes in and it challenges us to figure out a new way, or something that's been working for us stops working and we have to suddenly get creative.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that reaching really deep within to feel around the places we haven't been before, finding that, like that right there, I think is one of the highest forms of creativity I've ever found. And there's just such a deep sense of liberation and beauty that's held there that is just unparalleled. And once again, that's a really, really big piece of circus arts, and especially creating shows.
So is there an area that you feel like your creativity is woven into in the works that you've done?
Yeah, I would say Aerial Silks. Definitely. And instead of, you know, I'll still hold on to a general feeling tone, but instead of thinking of it like writing an essay or a poem or this or that, I think of like an overarching idea. And all the different skills that I have, I view them as puzzle pieces. And I think that Aerial Silk specifically, there are just like so many different, you know, really complicated knots you can tie yourself into, and drops and this and that, which will wrap the fabric around you in such ways that it really is like a giant puzzle. And every time that I can find one skill that can just like perfectly fit into another, like these two pieces just click together, it brings me so much joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it can just be such a strong avenue to really promote this certain feeling tone, you know, taking that feeling tone and finding a piece of music that amplifies that feeling tone, and then finding costuming, and then really throwing all these different creative movement arts into that, and how that can all just, you know, elevate the entire piece into something really, really beautiful, where you get those tears of
happiness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of happiness,
excitement, euphoria.
One thing that keeps standing out for me as you're talking is, and you kept saying the word feeling tone, and then you described the man crying. Is the sense of how this is all there's, and you said it before, there's no words to this stuff. It's just we're working with the emotions and experience and what it's like to feel on a level that is storytelling without the words. And yeah, it's exciting.
It's very exciting. And that emotion that you're talking about, this calling out of people, it's like people are aching for it. They're really wanting for that. And so I'm curious to kind of draw this back to something I mentioned before about love of the self and love of the other and love of the community. Mike, you want to maybe start, and then Michaela, we can go to you. But how do you feel that, like, this, your performance and your work with performance arts or circus arts has expanded your understanding of yourself and self-love, maybe more specifically?
Being raised as an artistic gymnast, I was, you know, tried very constantly, especially as, you know, a youth, not only like in the physical world, but working with my own emotions and, you know, really exploring a lot of these different realms. And like the deeper that I went into those, the more intimately I knew myself, and the more intimately that I knew myself, the more I loved myself, because I knew that I had this really strong thing to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this amazing outlet where I could, you know, express myself through, you know, just rolling around on the floor, for lack of a better term, or rolling around in the sky, or, you know, playing with this piece of fire, and being able to know that I had the power to leap through these boundaries of fear.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big awakening factor for me.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, especially within the realm of acrobatics, it's you really have to like love and support each other in order to make any of the work happen at all. You know, you can't have that ego, you can't have that that whatever boundary limitation that's holding you back from being able to accomplish this skill or having the frustration with your partner to work this out, because it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And like that, I don't know, just knowing that boundary of fear and stepping just beyond that is where I found, you know, some of the most beautiful moments of my entire life. You know, being able to like really step within my own heart and, you know, let my heart know that it's okay, you know, that we've done scary things before and that they have turned out to be some of the most magical, beautiful moments of our entire life. And being able to hold that energy throughout, you know, just a daily practice is
right.
Profound. Yeah.
I can't agree with you more, Mike. I think that working to push past your boundaries and create accomplishment in your life is majorly a form of self-love. I don't think people generally feel good when they're not accomplishing the goals that they've set for themselves. People often talk about being stuck in a rut or not being able to move on to the next thing. And I try and stay away from that as much as possible. So every time I go into practice, I do something that scares me, and I still don't like it. I still get scared every single time. When I hit that skill for the first time, even if it's just for a second, and it wobbles and it falls down immediately, I still did it. And then, you know, 5 practices from now, it's staying up for 3 seconds. And 10 practices now, maybe I can hold it for as long as I want. And that accomplishment each time is new, because there's a different level each time. And it feels good, and then better, and then amazing. Mm-hmm. And I move on to the next, and that feels even more exciting. And it's a way to do it without having any negative repercussions. You know, it's safe, it's legal, everybody involved is consenting. Yeah. And I think that in my personal opinion, there's no better way to love myself than to pursue my goals.
What a great insight, too, though, to do something that scares you. Like, most people would cringe at that idea. Like, you're suggesting that I do something that I'm not actually, that I'm actually scared of doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, like, within limitations, like, you know that you're capable of doing whatever you're doing. You're not necessarily, like, doing acrobatics off of moving cars, you know, at this point.
Not yet.
Not yet. But that you're doing something that pushes your own edge, so that you know that you're not sort of resting on your laurels or being stuck doing something you've already done.
Yeah, it's all calculated risk. We've talked a little bit already about making sure we have mats, making sure that people are there to spot the skills, and doing things intelligently, you know, and with a lot of technique. But that doesn't stop your heart from racing and your brain from saying these little things that I know aren't true, but it's
like,
really,
oh my God, what are you doing?
No, like, I'm gonna fall on my neck and I don't want to do that. So it's just about trusting myself. Mm-hmm. Trusting my partner, trusting the equipment, trusting my spots, and having a little bit of blind faith that even though this is a new skill and I've never done it before, the team working together has it. We can do it.
Nice, yeah. And especially as a leader, you need to be able to have that, especially in your team. It's such a magnitude of what you're creating, like literally, like Mike said before, putting your life in people's hands. Like, you have to have that little bit of blind faith that it's all going to go off, because if not,
and I have to instill that.
Yes.
I think Michael is amazing at it when he coaches aerial silks, which, for anybody that's listening that doesn't know, they're long ribbons or sheets that hang, and you climb up into them and like do major drops. You can see it. It's really prevalent in Cirque du Soleil and a lot of other shows as well. And I think people have a harder time with that blind faith than they do with acrobatics.
Yeah, I would definitely say so, because it's I mean, it's not necessarily only yourself that you have to trust that you tied this knot correctly. You know, I'm still definitely there to help, you know, hold your hand and guide you through, you know, whatever the proper steps you need to take in order to get the skill to happen. But sometimes, you know, you're wrapping yourself up 2, 3, 4 times. And one of the biggest drops I can do to date, it still scares me every time I do it. You know, I'm wrapped up there and I'm holding on to the fabrics and I'm like, all right, you know, like I just got to let go now.
It's a free fall from 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And blind faith, absolutely.
Blind faith.
So I wanted to go back to you, Mike. You had said something about your love of self and your expression of your emotions. And just from the bit that I've known you, that you seem very comfortable with your emotions and expressing them. And so it seems to be that there must be some sort of connection that with your practice and your expression of your emotions, that it has allowed you to feel more comfortable and confident in that expression. Because as a man, generally, like, you know, this is a big generalization, but in our society, expression of emotion, whether positive or negative, is associated in a particular way. And so I'm just curious if you want to speak to that a little bit, just of how you've been able to feel more confident in the expression of your emotions through your practice.
I would definitely attribute a lot of that to my practice, because like in the realm of circus arts, you know, when we are trying to convey an emotion for, you know, a certain show, or even just playing around and being silly, or, you know, maybe even having a tougher day when you're walking into practice, you can channel this energy into your practice and be able to find, you know, all these new outlets to really let that shine. And it's always shining within the realm of an artistic manner. You know, which does provide a little bit of like a blanket of security, because, you know, there's a lot of respect for art out there. And when you can comfortably step into that emotion and convey it through your movement arts, then it can just send ripples throughout, you know, your entire life.
Absolutely. And make you a stronger performer, because really, like, without being able to tap into that space, that really raw emotion, which a lot of people do attribute creative power to, then you have a very small amount of energy to give to it. So it seems like you've cultivated a strong amount.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say even some of my strongest artistic pieces have actually come from, you know, great deals of pain or strife within my own life, you know, and really being able to work through that sometimes thick and gunky energy through physical practice. Mm-hmm. And once I can, like, let that out, you know, that's the work that comes from it can be absolutely, like, so stunning, you know? And I think that's what people really want to see, too, you know? It's not just the masterpieces, but the realness of human beings,
right?
You know? And just watching that be all let out on the dance floor, in the sky, or in the fire circle.
Right. And the tie of the emotion with the story, with the performance, like you were saying, Mikaela, it's like tying all those things together. It's like that is what creates that strong emotional experience for the audience. It's like that's what they're looking for, and they may never know that's what they were looking for, but that's what you deliver for them, and they're so grateful.
One thing that is making me think about with our current world is how so many of us tend to pull our feelings in, or not hide our feelings, or not feel our feelings, especially generalized men, but I mean, all of us do it to some degree. And this theme on creativity, I'm almost having this idea as we're all speaking, that there's something about the creative arts that is almost our outlet for that. It's our way, even as an audience member, as someone to come and watch you all perform, or any performers perform, it's that desire to see that stuff in a setting where it's culturally okay, or done in a way that pushes the limits in some way.
Yeah, I think that's why anybody watches performance art. I think when you go and see a drama, a movie, and it's a drama, you're not, you know, necessarily going to feel good about it. Maybe you're sitting there bawling your eyes out. But it is. It's a release.
Right.
And that's what we try to do for people as much as we can.
And for ourselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Opening up that space for it to be okay. And then find creativity out of it. And like you said, you use it in the moments of pain are almost those driving points to new ideas.
I would say moments of extreme joy and elation have also been a very strong, like a very fertile ground for me to grow this creativity in as well. Mm. You know, just on both ends of the, you know, the wide spectrum, you know, wherever you can find those stronger, thicker ones, or mm-hmm. there's a lot of power in there that I feel is very important to explore throughout anybody's, you know, own internal journey work. Or
so for all the listeners out there who are listening and possibly excited or intrigued or interested, what are some of the ways that people can get involved or even see a performance?
We have the Acrobats have a performance on Thursday at Lost on Main, and it starts at 8:00 with Positive Eye. And then every Thursday and Sunday, we have public practices open to any friends who might be interested, anybody who wants to try it out. They are free, and it's a great way to get out and try something new and contribute to the community, because they are in a public space, which I think is a little intimidating, but also very exciting.
The Thursdays being at the farmers market to the left of the stage, and then Sundays, there's actually a group of jugglers and fire dancers who will jam from 12 to 2 at 1 mile, and then from 2 to 4 all of the acrobats come out. Yeah. Also this Sunday I'll be teaching a aerial silks workshop. You can find out more information about that if you go on Facebook to Chico Aerial Arts. Just add yourself to that page, and I'll be more than happy to guide you in any direction you want to there.
The Acrobats also have a Facebook page. Search Chico Acro, one word, in the Groups tab, and you can check us out on Instagram, also at Chico Acro.
Nice. And I've discovered you all from just walking by you at the Thursday night market, and I had a friend or two that I knew that were there, and so I walked up and I decided to just give it a try, and everyone was really friendly when I walked up. People I didn't know came and shook their hand and asked me if I wanted to try, if I wanted to learn something, and it was really... it was really nice.
We're a really friendly bunch. I have a theory that when we touch each other so much, it recalls us to other people that we might touch. And mainly that's your family and your loved ones. So I think the Acrobats have created a really strong bond with each other. On accident, maybe, just because we've been touching each other so much. And when people come into our space, we just like almost shout it at them with our, you know, like our hearts are just pouring out, and we almost don't even mean to. But we've gotten that feedback a lot, that people come up and they're overwhelmed by how open and willing we are to get you on somebody's feet, trying something you've never done before. And it, I don't know, the whole sport is, I've never met a more loving community than a room full of acrobats.
I can definitely attest to that as well. Coming from many different disciplines of circus arts before eventually making my way here to Chico this last year and studying acrobatics, something I noticed from a lot of other communities, say, like fire breathers, they're very exotic. There's only maybe 2,500 like truly artistic fire breathers in the world, and they're all very, very egotistical and very like cocky, like, oh, look at me, blah 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 blah, like, I bet you're not, you know, ballsy enough to do this trick or that, or they get into huge, you know, ego battles across the internet, even from, you know, countries away.
Yeah.
And I've just, you know, that especially compared to acrobatics, which is, you know, this group of very, you know, loving, supportive individuals, you know, not only physically lifting you up, but emotionally, mentally. And I just literally haven't met any, you know, more tight-knit, beautiful group of people than acrobatics. And there's just an amazing community right here in Chico.
And if there's any fire breathers out there, I'm sure you weren't speaking to that person.
Well, Michael is a fire breather.
Oh, you are yourself, okay. Yeah. So it's a broad generalization, but yeah. You know, they're...
But I like that sense, and then you describe the warmth and the closeness and that positive feeling that you get. And I know touch is one of the ways that oxytocin is stimulated, which mm-hmm. is the love chemical or the cuddle chemical. And so I'm sure there's a lot of that good opportunity to get a boost.
If any sociologists want to do a research paper on us, I would love to see those results.
Yeah, they certainly would be fascinating. So one more time, when is the performance at Lossaman?
It's Thursday night, so this week, 2 days from now, at 8 o'clock.
Awesome. And so there'll be a group of the practitioners, agro yogis?
Yeah, it'll be my boyfriend and I. It's our first ever solo duet. We're really excited.
Is it the love story?
It is the love story. And there'll be a lot of other circus performers there as well. Positive Eye is kind of a circus collective based out of Paradise. And mm-hmm. they were hired to do the show and asked us to perform with them. And of course, we said yes.
Awesome. Sounds great. And since you mentioned the relationship part, that was one of the last questions I wanted to get to. We have a few more minutes together, so if you guys want to touch on it a bit. The relationship component in the, you know, acro world, like whether that's your partnership, if that's a relationship you want to speak to, or just the relationship in general between people. I know you talked a little bit about it in terms of like that family component, but mm-hmm. just like even maybe one step closer than that family component, like to maybe the person you're practicing with all the time or in partnership, how much that comes up, whether that person's actually an acro yogi as well or not.
Mm-hmm. So my boyfriend clearly is an acro yogi, and we've been doing this sport together for 5 years, although we've never worked closely before as an exact partnership where we're sequencing together and putting that in a showcase. He's like the same size as me and maybe like 10-15 pounds heavier, so that's been like a long challenge that we're only really now able to address, and it's been a lot of fun. This has been a really, really exciting performance to put together because I get to work with him in a different way than I usually do. We're both typically tops. We will fly on the very top of the skills, and bigger people generally are on the bottom. And I have formed very touchy-feely platonic relationships with a lot of men in acro that haven't been my boyfriend, and he's been there having his own partnerships with other people every step of the way. And it feels so good to create love and touch in another aspect. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like dancers that you see working together that might not be in a relationship. You can just feel the connection. You can see how well they know each other, and just love exudes from it. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Great. Thank you for speaking to that part of building your relationship by actually participating and watching your partner have close connections with other people.
Yeah.
Would you say that doing this together bonds you more as a couple?
I think it does. I definitely think it does. We've had lots of couples come to acrobatics together and learn it. You know, they're both starting out from the very bottom. Neither partner has done it more than the other. And I think it can, for couples who are trying it out for the first time, it shows them how to communicate in an acrobatics way that I think can penetrate the rest of their relationship. If you can tell somebody, you know, oh, it hurts when you have your foot there, can you move it? You might be able to say, it hurts when you say that, can you say it a different way?
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Right? And that's been really fun to watch. Watching couples maybe not have the best partner talk with each other at the beginning of their practice versus 6 months in, mm-hmm. how sweet and loving they are can be with each other. That's really beautiful to watch. That makes me feel really good as a coach. Mm-hmm. I love seeing people grow together, and I hope that it gives them the same feeling in their relationships that it has for me and mine.
Sounds so great.
It is.
will you say again how to find out more online?
Yeah, Chico Acro on one word on the groups tab in Facebook and on Instagram. as well.
Great. Yeah.
And then for the aerial community, there's Chico Aerial Arts, three words on Facebook. It's another group. You can add yourself to it and learn a lot more about those happenings. And then there's also Full Moon Fire Jams. We do them every month. The location changes. We like to bounce around from 1078 to sometimes, you know...
houses around town.
Open houses around town and you know, just having a... Yeah.
A nice, solid place to land. Awesome. So thank you both so much for joining us. Creative Love in Motion. Thank you for sharing your love with the community and expressing it that way. The community is definitely greater for having you be here.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jonah, for inviting these wonderful folks on. It's been a pleasure. For everybody else, stay tuned for Ecotopia. Coming up next, they're on every Tuesday from 6 to 7. Stephen and Susan Schutte, as they discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. Stay tuned for us next Tuesday. We'll be back here talking about love and creativity with Adam Mose.
Will Durst here with a few choice words about the big brouhaha between the FBI and Apple Computers, which has turned into a battle between the forces of good and emissaries from hell, with both sides claiming to be the good guys. It's the age-old battle between privacy and security, a slope more slippery than a caffeinated eel in a bathtub full of bacon grease. The problem is, you let one government into your back door, and every other government is going to break land speed records to get in line to do the same, and not all of them will be bringing lubricant. There's no such thing as a virgin repair kit. The FBI says they only need to do this once. Yeah, right. Federal investigators in 11 other jurisdictions have already filed motions seeking access to suspects' iPhone data. A Manhattan DA has 175 iPhones he wants to crack. The FBI says we need to trust them. The same FBI that vowed they weren't conducting illegal surveillance on Americans until it was revealed they were. You mean that FBI? I wouldn't trust that FBI as far as I could throw two handfuls of glue. And the fallacy of the backdoor code remaining secure is so laughable, it should be greenlighted its own sitcom on Comedy Central. Their claim that nobody else would get their hands on this technology.